This is our third case scenario to talk about the vortex management techniques. We have a patient, Angela Scott. She's a 65-year-old woman. She's 68 inches tall. She weighs 80 kilograms, and she has a history of third-degree burns to her face and neck 20 years ago. However, now she comes in the emergency room with in extremis with pneumonia. And this is going to be a slightly tricky case because there's a couple different management styles and techniques for this patient, depending on how stable she is at any given time. Her respiratory rate on admission is 28. Her heart rate is 125. Her blood pressure is 110 over 70. Her oxygen saturation is 98%. That's with a 100% non-rebreather mask already on in the emergency room, coming off of the ambulance, let's say, and into the emergency room. So I'll go through the airway assessment, and then Dr. French will pick this up in terms of how he would take care of this patient in the emergency room. So she has a Mallinckrodt score of 4, which is limited due to her limited oral aperture. Her interincisor distance is 1.5 centimeters. Her thyromental distance is 6 centimeters. However, there's quite a bit of scarification over the mandible and the trachea. She has full range of motion, still, even with the scarification, and her, what did I want to mention? Oral aperture. Pickup. So her oral aperture is significantly limited by the facial burns to a very small oral aperture. That's why her Mallinckrodt score is so limited as a 4. She has rails and auscultation due to her pneumonia. And when she comes in, she's still maintaining her sat. She doesn't look like she's working hard, but she's not going to collapse imminently. Dr. French, how would you approach this patient in the emergency room?
Well, as you mentioned, Jessica, you can see just on the lemon exam, externally, she has these burn scarification. Her interincisal distance is 1 finger. Thyromental distance is adequate, but her high hypothyroid notch is very covered with scars and a lot of contractures there. So in your laryngeal exam, again, the scarification and the burns ends on the mandible. Even though her external larynx is mobile in midline, it would be a difficult airway that you can identify immediately. So you need to plan for failure, as we've talked about. Definitely, Krykon status would be red, so you'd want your cricothyrotomy equipment out at the bedside. You want to confirm the contents, and you want to identify, if you can, a proceduralist who would be ready to do that should it be needed if you have the available help. You also want to identify the cricothyroid membrane right away.
I would certainly emphasize in this is a particular case where you want to mobilize additional resources, additional personnel, expertise and equipment, so definitely agree with you on that.
Yes, I'd be calling anesthesia right away.
Right.
Unfortunately, sometimes we don't have anesthesia available in some VA emergency departments, or they may be in the OR with a case.
And this kind of patient usually turns up at 2 in the morning. Anyway,
yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
So from an anesthesia standpoint, most anesthetists approaching this patient would see a fiber optic airway due to
an
the limited oral,
yes,
an awake intubation due to the limited oral aperture. Most anesthesiologists would approach this patient with a topicalization, sedation, and then a fiber optic intubation.
Right.
However, in the patient who's an impending collapse, this becomes a completely different scenario,
right.
And airway management of any means is necessary.
And the awake intubation is also possible with good topical anesthesia using video laryngoscopy, and could be attempted, but you really need, if you have it available, to be mobilizing the fiber optic equipment and operator if you can't do that in the emergency department. But definitely, this is not a patient that you would want to do an RSI on if you could avoid it.
All right, so let's say she's no longer stable. She becomes unstable. Her SATs start dropping precipitously. She's 98%, 97%, 96%, 95%. Dr. French, how would you then go about managing this patient in the emergency room?
I would attempt an RSI, knowing full well that I probably would not be successful. Then
By an RSI, you mean an endotracheal intubation?
Endotracheal
intubation attempt, okay.
Right. Endotracheal intubation is an RSI. I would certainly have a rescue airway, supraglottic airway, be it a LMA or King airway, whichever is the preference of the operator in the facility. If that were not successful, as in this case, probably not, you need to be able to bag valve mask the patient. And you have to remember that bag valve masking the patient, again using adjuncts and optimization techniques, is usually successful. And as long as you can maintain oxygenation with bag valve mask, you're in the green zone.
Can we hold? Stop. You're making your phone click.
What?
Yeah, someone's. There's a beeping noise coming.
There's a beep.
Oh, it's out there. Okay, sorry. I thought it was someone's phone beeping.
Yeah. That,
sorry.
Well, an occasional beep in the background is not a big deal.
Okay. Okay. I just was just like.
Yeah. I was wondering too. I thought it was coming
right.
From the
picture.
They have a pickup.
All right. So let's. So we'll pick up now. You're able to bag valve mask ventilate this patient, and that buys you time to reassess and figure out how else to manage it. In this particular case scenario, because of her limited oral aperture, supraglottic airway placement is impossible just due to the nature of the size of the supraglottic airway. Either video laryngoscopy or direct laryngoscopy are both impossible, again, due to the size of the apparatus that needs to go into the mouth. If you are in a facility that lacks a fiber optic device and or staff at that time, one should deeply consider a surgical airway in this patient. As Dr. French points out, having an airway is lovely, but you can't bag valve mask all day. and this is not a definitive airway for this patient.
Yes, this patient certainly needs a definitive airway. And while we can't bag mask ventilate with the saturation optimal, this is the time to actually proceed with a surgical airway.
And as they point out in the Vortex model, that you can have adequate oxygenation, but still require emergency surgical airway. You don't want to wait until you have an adequate oxygenation and your SATs are dropping off.
So this brings up an excellent point as to when to decide to perform a surgical airway. The Vortex states, and the ASA algorithm states, that once all options for an invasive airway and a non-invasive airway, face mask ventilation, endotracheal tube, and a supraglottic airway have all been attempted and have all failed, and the patient's saturation is still adequate, it is at that point one should attempt a surgical airway. There is no caveat for waiting for the patient to desaturate to some magic number and then attempting a surgical airway. In the literature, it's quite clear that obtaining a surgical airway takes about 45 seconds if all of the equipment is readily available at the patient's bedside and the operator is practiced in this technique.
Another important part of that, too, is that as the oxygen saturations drop and the stress of both the airway operator and in the patient's room begins to increase, studies have clearly shown that that amount of stress decreases the performance of all the
Absolutely.
Members of the airway team, and your chances of success become even less. So you want to do it while you have adequate oxygenation and some time and decrease the stress and make sure you're on the right place in the stress performance curve.
Right, so there's no magic oxygen saturation number at which one starts doing
exactly
a surgical
right.
airway.
And certainly when you look at the NAP study, they've shown that in cases where a surgical airway was attempted and patients still suffer significant morbidity or mortality, certainly in many, if not most of those cases, the surgical airway was attempted too late.
Most errors in emergency medicine are errors of omission, not commission.
Right.
So if the patient's oxygen saturation is, let's say, in the mid-90s at this point, and a surgical airway is attempted, and takes, let's say, the optimal time, let's say all things are working well that day and takes 45 seconds, usually by the completion of 45 seconds, starting with this patient at 95%, you're going to be in the low 80s by the time you obtain the surgical, the airway.
Yes.
So exactly. So starting from that point is far more helpful to the patient than starting at 68%,
correct,
going into the 50s and 40s, needing to give atropine due to bradycardia and coding the patient. It's far more efficacious to do this earlier. I think that completes our discussion of case number 3.
I think so, yes.
I think so.